Prime Minister fled to London, and together with Churchill and Roosevelt, the President of the United States, they actually sort of made a deal that all uranium from the Belgian Congo would actually be part of the Manhattan Project, basically. And, you know, that was 3,000 ton, 70% high-grade uranium. Half of that was still above ground when Lumumba took power. So that was part of the equation, what was going on in Katanga.
That's Belgian filmmaker Johan Grimompré, director of Soundtrack to a Coup d'État, which has been nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. Told entirely through archival footage, the film's a sweeping story of the events leading up to the assassination of the Congolese independence leader, first Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba. To see the whole interview, go to democracynow.org. You can also see other interviews Democracy Now! Has conducted about other films nominated for this year's Oscar, including the Palestinian-Israeli film No Other Land, also nominated for Best Documentary about the Palestinian community of Masafer Yatta, which was recently attacked by Israeli settlers. There's also the best short documentary, I Am Ready, Warden, about the death penalty that began when a Texas man asked journalist Kerry Blakinger to witness his execution. And The Apprentice, nominated for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor, the film many say Trump doesn't want you to see, that looks at how Trump was mentored by Roy Cohen, former chief counsel to Senator Joseph McCarthy during the Red Scare. He mentored as he built his New York real estate empire. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for listening to KVOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's nominating committee meeting will be held on Tuesday, February 18th at 6 p.m. This meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website.
Welcome to Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, your weekly antidote to the doom and gloom of mainstream news, lifting up solutions that bring us closer to economic, racial, gender, and environmental justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. This week, we'll bring you a one-hour special focusing on migrant workers, the attacks they're facing from politicians demonizing and deporting them, and how they are organizing. The National Day Laborer Organizing Network is one of the largest networks of migrant workers in the United States. On the eve of the anti-immigrant Trump administration's inauguration, and in the wake of the devastating Eaton fire, migrant workers sprang into action with Know Your Rights trainings and fire brigade cleanup efforts. Today, you'll hear from Pablo Alvarado, co-executive director of the National Day Laborer Organizing Network, or ENDELON, Omar Leon, arts coordinator of ENDELON, who helped to oversee the fire brigades, and Manuel Vicente, director of Radio Jornalera, a multimedia effort aimed at telling the stories of migrant workers. That's coming up in just a moment. Thank you. This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. It has been more than a month since the devastating Eaton Fire in Southern California's Altadena that led to the loss of more than 6,000 family homes and 17 lives in a mixed-income, mixed-race, historically black community. The deadly fires swept through a region where migrant workers were bracing for the second Donald Trump administration to launch an operation rounding up and deporting them. The National Day Laborer Organizing Network, or NDLON, which runs the Pasadena Community Job Center, has been preparing for the onslaught of anti-immigrant policies from Trump. The group launched fire relief efforts while also conducting Know Your Rights trainings all over the nation against ICE raids. I spoke with Pablo Alvarado, co-executive director of NDLON, at the offices of the Pasadena Community Job Center.
My name is Pablo Alvarado, and I work as co-executive director of NDLON, which stands for National Day Labor Organizing Network.
Pablo, I followed your work for many years. The Pasadena Community Job Center has also been around here for many years. How do you situate this Pasadena Center within NDLON's national work? Because you are a national organization.
Well, I don't know if it is a coincidence, a curse, or a blessing. But it turns out that the only center that we directly operate as a network is this one. The other centers are autonomous entities that we connect around questions of policy and campaigns and programs. But this one we use as a place where we train organizers. So people from all over the country come here to this center, and it turns out that this catastrophe took place here, and it impacted day laborers who come to the center, who came and said, look, all I have on is all I possess. And not only that, I don't even have a job anymore because the home of my employer was burned down. So it's been story after story that's come to this worker center, and that's why the center has become a hub for so many things that are happening in terms of recovery work here in Pasadena and in Altadena.
All of this started happening. The fires began just days before the second Trump administration took power. And we all remember how horrific that first Trump administration was. We also, some of us remember that the Biden administration didn't roll back many of the Trump administration policies. It's been almost a decade, if not longer, of more and more and more anti-immigrant rhetoric and policies. Here we are at a time when migrant workers are doing their best to help this community recover and might be worrying about if they're gonna get picked up by ICE and deported without even any questions asked, whether they have papers or not. How do you put this moment into that broader context of what's happening politically from Washington, D.C.?
Well, while the workers are still recovering from the actual fire that took place here in our community, they are not just rebuilding their own lives, they are rebuilding the lives of others as they go in and participate in the cleanup operation and removing debris, et cetera, et cetera. But on top of that fire, we had a new fire that started in the 20th of January. And that is the Trump administration came in with all the threats that he's made throughout these years that we are certainly taking very serious. Threats of mass deportation, mass incarceration, and we see all the wave of fear that they're trying to generate, to create in the community so that people hide, so that people don't come out and continue with their lives. The strategy of our adversaries have never been to address the issue but to use the issue for their own political purposes. And I would say in this sense, the war on immigrants is not just the Republican Party's bipartisan. It's both that have attacked immigrant communities. And lately, that's even more visible with the new legislations that are being passed in Washington, D.C., where a significant segment of Democrats have essentially turned to the right because they're trying to
outdo the Republicans, or
they believe that someone has told them that the issue of immigration comes with liability, political liability for them, and that it's bad to be pro-immigrant, and they're even blaming immigrant rights organizations for their loss.
For their political loss in November.
They are blaming organizations, saying that it was the activist organization, centers like this one, that's doing beautiful things, you know, for the community, that centers like this pushed them so far to the left that they lost the country's opinion on immigration. So we're being blamed for their political loss. And that's, unfortunately, where we are. And the hypocrisy cannot be as crystal clear as it is in this moment in Los Angeles, because it's impossible to rebuild LA without migrant labor. A significant segment of people who work in the construction industry are undocumented immigrants. And by the way, they're the ones that are cleaning right now in those areas. You know, so that's the hypocrisy that we live in this country, where both adversaries, foes, pseudo friends and frenemies, they all benefit from migrant labor, but they are not willing to accept people's humanity. But what that means is granting them the rights that they deserve, the people deserve.
How are you preparing the community of workers for the raids?
Well, because there is so much widespread fear, there is no way that you can actually defend yourself when you are fearful. So the first step that you need to take is to remove that fear. And the way you remove that fear is by making sure that people know that they have rights and that they can exercise those rights. And I believe that it's happening, that people are no longer opening the door unless they're shown the evidence that the person that they're looking for, you know, lives there, and the name is in a judicial warrant issued by a judge, not an administrative warrant. People understand that they can remain silent. So even Homan himself recognized that it's being more difficult because people more and more understand what their rights are. So that's the first step. You know,
so is Andalon doing Know Your Rights trainings?
Across the board, everywhere, all over the country.
Mm-hmm. So you're doing the trainings to folks who are likely to encounter authorities. And of course, I imagine authorities are hoping or expecting people to not know what their rights are and to ensnare them in a way.
Correct. Well, and they intimidate people when they come in. Sometimes they don't even say that they're immigration agents. They disguise themselves as police officers, and they knock on doors and they say the police. But people have to ask, you know, let me see, show me your warrant.
Show me your paper.
That's exactly right. It's turning the tables, you know, the other way and asking for their papers. Show me who you are. Mm. And I think that those, more and more, the more we talk about it, the more people understand what those rights are. And we're going to go through a period, I believe, where there's fear. Like in the first term of the Trump administration in
2016,
you know, there was a moment where
people, 2017 onwards.
That's right. People were fearful
yeah.
the first 6 months. or the first 3 months, I don't remember exactly, but there was fear. But there's one fact, and that is that you have to feed your family, and you have to keep on living. You have to keep on, you know, living your life, taking your children to school, going to work, going to the church, going to taking your kids to the soccer game. I mean, we can't, you know, succumb to fear. And because when you're fearful, then you cannot defend yourself. You cannot be rational. So removing that fear is essential. And the attacks are not just the policies and the politics and the enforcement of laws. The attack is also aimed to get into the hearts and minds of people so that they feel that they're less than human, that they don't have rights. That way, when you demonize a community, you do it because you want that community to feel inferior. And that way you don't defend yourself. And that's the purpose of generating that fear.
So much of the rhetoric that's based in the fear of immigrants is easier to do because we live at a time of economic insecurity and economic inequality, right? Because the Trump administration and other politicians basically point to immigrants as being the source of people's problems. They're why you don't have a job and can't afford this and that. It's a useful distraction away, of course, from the billionaires. Yeah. How do you counter this rhetoric and this narrative that immigrants are the problems? Because, of course, immigrants, even the ones who do have jobs and might be willing to work for less, shouldn't have to work for less, right?
Correct.
Why should their labor be so cheap?
Yeah. Well, there are two, the way we answer that question, it's through ensuring that workers understand and you know what they get into when they go with a particular employer, that they have a minimum wage that they agree upon. Like there are 70 worker centers like this one across the country.
And that's what this center does, is ensures exactly that they don't get taken advantage of.
It takes this type of centers, and as unions usually do, they take wages out of the competition. So you set up a wage standard that everybody follows in this center. That way you get rid of that exploitation. You know? And because that argument that immigrant workers lower wages and working conditions for everybody in the country, that's a lie. It's the employer who takes advantage of the precarity.
Yeah.
That's the word, right? Precarity, yeah. of working people. Mm. They are the ones who are responsible, not the worker. The worker survives all of those ways of exploitation. So that's one way we answered the question that you asked. The second way is exactly doing what this worker center has been doing since the fires took place here in the area. And it's essentially that divisions have been imposed from the top down. American workers have been told, US-born workers have been told, the reason why your life sucks in the Appalachian is because those immigrants from Guatemala over there in South Central Los Angeles or whatever, you know, the reason why you have to pay more for gas is because of this, everything, you know. So that's, those divisions are imposed from the top down, and all of a sudden we're fighting among ourselves, among working people, you know. So what we've done here in this job center is that in the face of this crisis that we have, of this disaster that devastated Altadena, what workers have done is like, well, you know, I remember when the winds started, like a lot of trees fell on the streets, and they say, well, we have chainsaws, we have the skills, so we're going to form fire relief brigades, and we're going to go out there. And they were removing debris branches, trees that were blocking driveways, mm-hmm. and they weren't asking whether the people who owned those homes were Republicans or not. They were doing it because they love the community, and that's one of the greatest virtues of being an immigrant, that you love the place where you come from, but you also love the place where you live, and that's with the same intensity. Mm. And I think that's what this country needs. In other words, while the powerful and the rich impose those divisions from the top down, we have to build love and solidarity from the bottom up. And this is what this center is doing. Just the first 3 weeks after that disaster, the center served about 27,000 people who came to get water, to get diapers, all kinds of
right. So it wasn't just the fire brigades that were cleaning the streets. No. The center became a hub for donations, a mutual aid hub, right?
Yes,
people were dropping off donations and others
exactly.
were picking them up.
And that still continues because as people come back, there's more need. And I can tell you that I have, since the pandemic, the center has run a food bank. And it's usually working people coming to pick up food. Now it's people driving in BMWs, Mercedes,
wow.
and I saw a Porsche coming in, because that's one of the things that disasters have. They don't discriminate. It's across the board.
Especially climate disasters.
In a way, it's an equalizer. Even though people start from different footings, because obviously an engineer or a lawyer is in a better place, even though he or she may have lost the home, is in a better place than a day laborer who lost his or her home, you know. So, but in a way, everybody needs. And the beauty about this place is that it's the workers who are helping the employers who lost their homes.
So it's a turning of the
table. It's a turning of the table. And I think that's how you build a country, not by imposing divisions, not by overheated rhetoric and fascism and polarization. You build a country by bringing people together. That's exactly what the Worker Center has been doing.
And the other thing that strikes me is that the help is given in a non-discriminatory way. There's no means testing. You know, from government, we're constantly told, you can get help if you are low income, if you are a citizen, if. But when you have disasters like this and mutual aid hubs, it doesn't matter who you are. If you drive a Porsche or you don't have a car and you need the food, you get the food, no questions asked.
Correct. There are people who come here during days where we don't do distribution or after the hours of distribution. And if we are here and there's something that they're asking for and it's there, we just give it away. As things come in, they go out. So it's been beautiful to one of the items that people need is personal hygiene kits or baby food. And that goes really fast, toilet paper, et cetera, things like that. When we run out of them, we do a social media post and we tell people we're out of this, and then you will see families immediately bringing those items.
So you're coordinating the distribution.
This center, since the fires started and the response started, about 10,000 volunteers have come through.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably one of the largest, if not the largest, hubs for assistance for the survivors of with the fire.
So the leading by example shows that it's a situation that's built on believing the best of humanity, as opposed to believing and being suspicious of other people and believing the worst of humanity, right? That is the sort of conservative way, is that you first assume the worst of human nature and get proven wrong, as opposed to assuming the best of human nature.
Yeah. Well, let me share this anecdote because I think it illustrates your point. It was the second day of the brigade. I was assigned a crew of people. It was about 100 people because we had so many volunteers that day. And our task was to go and clean the central park of Pasadena where there were trees falling, you know. And I remember that there were these five young men, really strong, and there was this operator of the chainsaw cutting the logs, and the logs were really heavy. And there were these five men working really hard, lifting the logs. And then it was like around, we were finishing like around 3 p.m. and one of the young men came to me and said, "Hey, Pablo, I really appreciate this opportunity because I've been seeing the devastation in my cell phone and I couldn't stand it anymore. I want to do something. And thank you for this opportunity." And he, you know, "Can I give you a hug?" And I said, "Of course." And we embraced, you know, and I thanked him. So, and after the embrace, I looked at him and he was wearing a Make America Great Again hat.
Wow.
And then, you know, he was working with five, together with five members of the Socialist Party. And they were cleaning the same park, you know. So I think, like, that's why I really think that the divisions are imposed from the top down. When people are told you're suffering, your situation is because of these other people. Mm-hmm. And when things like this happen, you know, humanity is above any ideology,
yeah,
partisanship or race or religion, faith, whatever you want to call it. So there are so many stories that have taken place in this very, you know, humble daily labor center. Yeah. Oh, that the world is better than what the political leaders are saying, you know, and that we're closer to each other than the way they're polarizing the world, you know. And I think, like, it's been beautiful to see the brigades going into the neighborhoods that historically have been very conservative, and people coming out to give workers food or thank them, take a picture with them. I remember this lady coming out and saying, I've been calling the city for 3 weeks for them to come and remove this goddamn tree, you know. That was like an 80-year-old lady. And now here you are. And let me take you down the street because there's a branch that's blocking the sidewalk. And as we were walking to see the branch that was blocking the sidewalk, she tells me, "You know, there are a lot of people that hate you." And I said, "Yes, I know that." And then she says, "But you know, there are a lot of people that hate me too." And I said, "That might be the case, you know." That's the way I responded. But she said, "You know, but we're more than the color of the skin, it's what's in the heart."
Wow.
And I think we have so many stories like that, you know, that happen in this process.
Wow. That's a great story to end on. Pablo, thank you so much for all that you do and for spending this time with me.
No problem. Thank you, Sonali. Good to see you.
My guest has been Pablo Alvarado, co-executive director of the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. I spoke with him at the offices of the Pasadena Community Job Center, which is located quite near to where this program is produced. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify. This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The Pasadena Community Job Center, established by the National Day Laborer Organizing Network, or NDLON, 25 years ago, was poised to move into action when the Eaton Fire devastated the tight-knit community of Altadena and North Pasadena. Just a few miles south of the epicenter of the fires, many migrant workers lost homes or lost jobs in homes that were destroyed. The job center, which links employers to workers to ensure safety, fair wages, and high work standards, sprang into action. NDLON organized fire brigades, comprising volunteers from the community and day laborers who organized cleanups of streets, backyards, and sidewalks, clearing debris, ash, and waste. The job center, meanwhile, was turned into a mutual aid donation hub. I went to the Pasadena Community Job Center, located close to where this program is produced, and spoke with one of the organizers of the fire brigades.
My name is Omar Leon, and I'm the arts coordinator for the National Day Labor Organizing Network. I'm mainly involved with the production of music, writing music, working on musical arrangements for our house band, which is Los Jornaleros del Norte. And we make music about workers' struggles, workers' rights, immigrants' rights. And this band performs in marches, rallies, and even when union workers are negotiating their contracts, we bring the music to help nice. Their rallies and protests.
Tell me about what you've been involved in since the Eaton fires in Altadena and in North Pasadena. What has the job center been doing and what have you been involved in?
Well, since day one, the Pasadena Community Job Center organized this effort to assist all the people affected by the fires. And since day one, among many other activities of support, we organized what we call the fire brigades. These were groups of people, day laborers, household workers, and many, many community volunteers from various areas of greater Los Angeles who came and support to do community cleanups. Basically, we were heading out every morning around 8 a.m. to the neighborhoods to pick up branches, trees, fallen trees, to clean the leaves, all the dirt and the houses. So we were able to do that every morning from 8 a.m. and we will end our activity until 4 p.m. on a daily basis.
Now, I live in North Pasadena and I noticed your brigades. That's how I found out about what you were doing because your workers came and helped clean out my backyard. You were there, I believe it was the 10th of January is when I first saw you. That was 3 days after the fire. Your organization mobilized very quickly.
Yes, because what happened, we were here at the center on Tuesday when the very, very strong winds started. And then we started noticing lots of traffic. And that's when we started looking at our phones because we were having a band rehearsal. Mm-hmm. And we noticed that people were evacuating. So we ended the rehearsal and we started looking at the news. And the next day, we saw everything that happened on the news. And the next day, the workers were holding a meeting here at the Pasadena Center at 6 a.m. in the morning and saying, what are we going to do to help this community, to help all these people impacted by these fires? And since they won, started. I was on the phone and I saw that I was talking to one of my coworkers and he told me we're holding an emergency meeting to see what the center is going to do to respond to these fires and to see how the center is going to help the community. And they started organizing and since day one, yeah. People organized the food distribution bank and then the fire brigades.
Yeah. So you trained brigades of volunteers. I saw they were outfitted in the proper outfits with the masks and the gloves and the goggles, and they had the trash bags, they had the equipment. You organized this very quickly. Did you, and obviously this was an entirely volunteer effort. You weren't out there charging people any money for this. In fact, I think some of my neighbors were asking, should we be paying these folks? And I said, I think they're with the job center. I think they're actually volunteering. And we're so not used to that idea of service, right? That you serve your community.
This is something that Andy Long has done, the National Day Labor Organizing Network has done in the past, mm-hmm. when there's been needs, emergencies, catastrophes. Day laborers are always been there to give a hand. So this is what they did here in Pasadena as well. And every morning before heading out, we were holding a brief health and safety training. We are fortunate that we have inside Andy Long, we have staff members that have the expertise in terms of health and safety. So those were the people handling those conversations, handling those brief trainings to all the community volunteers and to the day laborers. And during this whole process that doing the cleaning day from day to day, we organized formal OSHA trainings for each individual that was heading out. So everyone had to take one complete day off of volunteering to stay in a classroom, getting their OSHA certification to be able to work in areas of disaster.
So this was a highly organized effort. This was not some haphazard, let's go out and try to fix it. It's a highly organized effort. And I understand from what I can see that that can happen when you already have an infrastructure in place that's been here for many years. This center has been here for a while.
Yeah, this center has been in the community for so many years, and Andy Long has past experiences where there's been hurricanes or other big events that had affected communities.
And just for our audience, Andy Long, the National Day Labor Organizing Network, which is the sort of umbrella organization under which the Pasadena Community Job Center works.
Yes. So that's why they have the experience, and that's why they were able to help make this response more effective. Of course, there was always challenges, difficulties every day, but we did our best to respond to the community, and at least for people to know that we were there to give a hand, because I know people are going through a lot, and anything that we can do in terms of, I feel really proud about the day laborers, because we're talking about very humble people that some of them started the year without a permanent job or without even a temporary job, but they never doubted a minute when they said, we're gonna start volunteering every day. People were like showing up even as soon as 6 in the morning. Some even though our call was to be here at 8, everyone was starting to show up at 7 a.m. in the morning. Mm-hmm. By the time I will get here, the center was already packed with people waiting to head out.
So the people who volunteered to clean up, it seems as though they were a combination of day laborers, you know, workers who normally would come through this center to get jobs, but also volunteers from the community who organized, like a combination of
them. it was great, because we had like probably more than 200 day laborers permanently, but on top of that, there were weekends or there were weeks where or days that we will get more than 600 volunteers registered. And I believe
from like just the city registered.
There were certain days that we hit more than 800 volunteers. Wow. There was because we will divide by groups, and there were days that each group had like more than 40 to 45 people.
This was the brigade. Each brigade
per brigade,
right?
And each brigade had two howling trucks. So we were putting everything, branches, right, leaves, everything. We will put them into the truck, fill that up, and then they will go and dump it to the designated dump area.
Did you coordinate with city authorities? Because usually this is the kind of thing that you would expect city authorities to do for its residents. And of course, the city has been doing some work, but it takes time. And, you know, the trucks have come and picked up debris that was set out on sidewalks. But were you coordinating at all with city authorities?
This was an effort of the Pasadena Job Center.
Independently.
We were able to coordinate the designated area to dump. But other than that, it was a community effort which was mainly run by the Pasadena Community Job Center. And unfortunately, I don't know why I'm still asking myself this question up to this date. Where was the city? Mm-hmm. It took me, I think, the whole time to see city employers doing any sort of cleanup.
It took time.
Last 3 days I started noticing some of the white trucks or some city employees, but it took them time to respond. I think they were really highly impacted. That's why they didn't have a faster response.
Why was this so important for Andalon and for the job center to be of service in this way? How do you fit this in the broader world view of how the organization, you know, fits in a city like Pasadena and even nationally in this political landscape, if you will?
When people talk about the laborers, some people express themselves very badly about the laborers. They call us criminals, illegals. They say that we come here to steal the jobs. But we are part of the community, and this center is part of the community. And what the day laborers show with this response was that they're always willing to give a hand, and they're always willing to help the community that they live in. Even though a lot of people look at day laborers as criminals, they always show these people that they're wrong. So I think this was an act of solidarity and love. I think most people, I wouldn't doubt it, were doing this because of love, because they felt the pain of these people that in a matter of a minute, they lost everything that they worked so hard for. Yeah. And the laborers were feeling the pain, and that's why they wanted to help so much. Yeah. During the day, I will take like periods of minutes to just step back and look, and I will see people working with lots of passion and lots of responsibility, and with high ethics. And I was saying, this is incredible. I mean, how can someone that is being attacked on a daily basis work this hard for? Nothing but the purpose of serving its own community.
Yeah. Altadena is a historically Black neighborhood. A lot of Black Altadenans lost their homes as well. Did you also see this as an act of racial solidarity and love?
Yes, the Pasadena Center, even though I don't work every day here at the Pasadena Center, but has built a strong relationships with the Black community. And this is something that we feel very proud of. And because the Black community also faces a lot of challenges, a lot of discrimination, mm-hmm. and they had worked so far, and they have done so many good stuff that has impacted not only their community, but also immigrants. Mm-hmm. So just because of their work, we're also in a much better position as immigrants.
Are you going to write a song about the fires to perform for the band next?
I wrote a song and a poem for the brigade, kind of thanking them for their work. Mm-hmm. And I also, I was trying to manage it really well at night when I will get home around 11 p.m. after everything was over. I was looking at some testimonies of people that lost their homes, and I was watching their interviews, and based on that, I wrote a song that is called Fuego Fire.
Can you share anything of it with us? I don't know, do you ever sing a cappella?
Well, it's totally in Spanish, but I'll be able to.
Yeah, can you share a few lines for me for our audience?
Sure, it goes something like this. Fuego, fuego, te llevaste todo, pero no mi dignidad entre escombros y cenizas. Volveré a comenzar,
Fuego, fuego, aunque quemes fuerte, no me voy a derrotar, soy de corazón de acero y aquí vengo a demostrar. Humo deja cicatrices, pero nunca la derrota. Yo soy de esa gente firme que nunca rinde ni agota. Hoy levanto la mirada en un grito de valor, porque en medio de la nada volverá a brotar la flor.
Mm. Can you give us our audience, non-Spanish speaking audience, a brief idea of the feeling behind that song?
Well,
in English,
I'm not really really good at translating, but what I basically was saying in this song is basically repeating what the people were saying in their testimony. This is the everything that I worked for in my entire life, and I lost it in a blink of an eye, but I'm gonna get up from this. I'm gonna start from scratch. People were crying as they were being interviewed, but they never said, "Oh, this is it. I'm lost." They all repeated the same thing. I'm gonna overcome this. I'm gonna start from scratch, and I don't know how I'm gonna do it. I've done it in the past, and I'm gonna do it again. I'm gonna start from scratch, but I'm gonna rebuild. So that's more or less what the lyrics of the song say.
Omar, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Omar Leon is Arts Coordinator for the National Day Labor Organizing Network, or ENDALON. He helped to oversee the fire brigades that linked volunteers and day laborers in a massive city cleanup effort after the Eaton fire. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify. This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Senior Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The Pasadena Community Job Center lies in the heart of Pasadena, California, and is 2 miles from Altadena, where the deadly Eaton fire destroyed thousands of homes and claimed 17 lives. The migrant workers who participated in the job center's volunteer cleanup operations are regularly demonized by politicians. They're also busy telling their own stories and crafting their own narratives. Joining me to discuss it is Manuel Vicente, director of Radio Jornalera. He spoke with me in the sound studios within the Pasadena Community Job Center, where he runs a multimedia production showcasing the work of migrant day laborers and debunking the myths about them.
So my name is Manuel Vicente. I'm a director of Radio Jornalera.
Tell me about Radio Jornalera. Why does a job center that works with migrant workers have its own podcast or show?
Yeah, why not? I mean, Radio Jornalera, we launched Radio Jornalera in 2018. Mm-hmm. It was down the first Trump administration, and it was as a response of the rhetoric and the racist narrative against migrant workers. Yeah, for us, there is always, it should be a counter-narrative, because there is an imposed narrative, and then the counter-narrative should come from the bottom up, and it should be by the people. So for us, that is Radio Jornalera.
So the radio program is a way for you to counter the racist narratives of government, and of course, sadly, it's not just the Trump administration, right? Under Biden, we saw policies, even if the rhetoric wasn't as racist, you saw the policies that were very anti-immigrant. So what does the program look and sound like? Who do you speak with? What are some of the ideas that you explore?
Well, mostly it's for workers, members of organizations that are part of Endelon, and usually are like labor rights, immigration rights, but also like informative topics, cultural topic, music. We have a lot of type of content. And at the beginning, we create this project also, I mean, as a way to respond to those narratives, but also in a way to discover new skills into the workers. Because we train a lot of workers, because the people that is being part of the Radio Jornalera project, they never had the opportunity to be in front of a camera behind a microphone. So we teach them how to speak in front of the microphone, how to use the cameras, because it's not only like it's an audiovisual project. So we teach the worker how to connect the camera, how to connect the microphone, how the mixer works, but also how to produce a program, how to produce an interview. And for us, that's skill development, but also self-esteem development. So when someone have a strong esteem, they can fight against anything. So that's also a part of the Radio Jornalera does internally in the job center, but also in the nationally on Endelon. Because the first Radio Jornalera born here in the Pasadena Community Job Center, but we replicate the project nationally. We have 10 radio stations through the country, and we have 3 in Central America. So we replicate this project nationally, internationally, because it's a way for us also to amplify the voices of the working class community and the migrants.
So it's a program that's created by and for day laborers, migrant workers, and workers in the community. How do you then spread that to people outside the community? Because, of course, that's crucial too.
Yeah, and I think that's where the social media, that's an important part for us, because we have our platforms, we have our website, we have our applications so people can listen the shows, but also we integrate the social media aspect. So that's why we have the live streamings, you know, Facebook Live, Instagram Lives, now TikTok. And for us, include the social media aspect. We survey between the workers here, and 85% of them use YouTube and Facebook to inform themselves. So let's integrate that part. So that's how we spread the word through the world. And I think we have a pretty good engagement. For example, this past month, we reached 1.8 million persons.
Wow.
So an average for us, this is wow also for us, because an average is like 250,000, 350,000 people monthly. But with this situation, we'd reach 1.8 million persons.
So the program is a way for you to spread information within the community. So if you ever need to like put out a call or send a warning, it's a way for you've got a community that's already hooked into your media work, but then it's also a way for you to showcase the work that workers are doing, right? So you had the big brigades that Omar was telling me about, where workers were going in and volunteering out of the love from their hearts to clean up debris, and Radio Jornalera was there to videotape it and to show what was being done so that it wasn't in a vacuum, so that it wasn't lost, so that it was documented.
Yeah, that day, I remember the day that the workers decided to go out to start cleaning the streets. I took my phone and a couple of cameras, and I was doing a live stream on TikTok. And then a lot of comments, hey, where are you located, and blah, blah, blah. So that night we made a post, like we're gonna continue doing this tomorrow.
The brigades,
And the following day, I think around 400 people show up.
Wow.
And for it was, wow. And then the next day, 500 people, and then 1,000 people. So for us, to accompany the work that the brigade has been doing, but also what the migrant workers have been doing, not only during this situation of the fires, but also during the pandemic. Because the government called us essential workers, and now they want to kick us out. And then for us to show that to the world, to the community, with the people in action, I think it's super powerful for us.
Right. So how are you talking to the powers that be, right? So you're talking to one another, you're talking to people outside the community. What about reaching policymakers, politicians, the ones who actually have the power, the ones who are sending ICE out?
Well, for example, for them, we create a series that No Más Mentiras, No More Lies. Mm. So in this series, we are debunking those lies that those politicians spread about us. Because for me, on my understanding, obviously the politician has certain power because they take decisions. But the real power is in the community. And I want to focus on that power. And I want to talk to the people who has the power to change that rhetoric, even though it is imposed from up to bottom. But for them, we create this No Más Mentiras, No More Lies series, where we debunk those lies. And not only for Trump, but any politician, any public figure who said or spread misinformation about migrants, about working class community, and we are debunking those lies. And you can check it on YouTube or on our social media. And yeah, I think for us, that's a super powerful tool, a super powerful series, because we are debunking those lies from the worker class perspective, for the migrant perspective. And sometimes we debunk those lies with data, with info, and sometimes from the moral aspect of the experience of the workers. So it is a pretty cool series. I think View is super professional. It is a series of videos of 90 seconds, 2 minutes. It depends on the lie. But for us, it has been a learning process, because in the meanwhile, we are educating ourselves. And we create this series for the migrant and Spanish speaker community. But I think it is not only for the Spanish speakers, because each video is an educated tool.
Right.
And I would love you see one of those
meetings. Yeah, I would love to see one of them as well. And then the project and the coverage that you did of the brigades, did it have its own slogan? I remember seeing a slogan, something
Solo about, el pueblo salva el pueblo.
Say that again.
Please. Solo el pueblo salva el pueblo, which is only the people save the people. Because at the end of the day, there's no politician, there's no public figure, there's even a leader that is going to save us or protect us.
So in the face of a disaster, only the people will come and save the people.
Save the people. So that's the response, that's the displays, these day laborers. That's the reflection or example of that quote, right? Not only the people save the people. Because at the end of the day, we only have each other to protect ourselves.
Finally, how do migrants bring their own home country's culture of working class solidarity and labor organizing chops to the United States? Because there is a strong culture of worker organizing that a lot of folks are bringing from Mexico, from Latin, from Central America, right? That I think benefits the United States.
Yeah. For example, there is a indigenous Mexican practice, particularly in the south of Mexico, they call stequio, which is kind of as a community service. So it is, for me, it's a organizative process, because that tequio means is like, I need to help you and organize ourselves to build or to have a better community. So I think we have a lot of indigenous practices that probably we didn't know that it was an organizative tool. But at the end of the day, I think we bring that to the USA. But also I think we bring our tradition. We have, for example, myself, I come from hardworking people, honest people. And that's what I'm trying to show. I don't need to prove anything to nobody, but I'm trying to show who we are, because I wanted to change that rhetoric. I don't think that I don't believe that we are those words that they said, and I'm gonna do whatever is in my hands to debunk those lies and to show what a migrant looks like. And I think this is the perfect example of what we have been doing here at the job center, where the workers show up every morning at 6 a.m. to clean the streets without any expectation, like, oh, I'm going to receive this money, nothing. They do it because they want to show their love to the community. There's a way to show their solidarity. And that's how we are. Like, we like to help.
It's a way to say, this is my city.
This is my city. I'm part of this community.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Manuel. Yeah,
thank you.
My guest has been Manuel Vicente, director of Radio Jornalera. We spoke in the sound studios of the Pasadena Community Job Center, where Manuel runs a multimedia production showcasing the work of migrant day laborers and debunking myths about them. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, senior editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
Hey there, KBOO listeners. This is Dr. Tony.